You know, I think that one of the things it does for any organization that partners with a destination organization is it gives a different voice than you have. And I think it just gives another eye and another perspective to where I may say, well, you want to come because of this, and they may say something else.
Today's episode is brought to you by Relic. As many of you know, I own an advertising agency called Relic, and we work specifically with tourism destinations. If there's any of you that are struggling with what to do next, or you've tried agencies that don't specialize in tourism, or if you've been using the local flavor for years and years and you're just looking for something new, I would say give us a call. Give us the opportunity to take a look at your plan, see what you're doing. Use our tourism knowledge and industry specialty to examine everything from your brand to your tactical execution and make recommendations of how to help. We'll do that assessment for free. We'll give you those recommendations for free. And if you like what we say, maybe you can hire us to execute on those plans. So kind of a risk-free opportunity to have us take a holistic look at everything you're doing, provide some recommendations, and you can kind of see us in action. If you're interested in having us do something like that, please send me an email directly at adam@relicagency.com. I would love to set that up with my team. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker, and I'm excited to be with you today. We've got another fun episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast on the road. We are sitting now in one of the corporate suites for the Bristol Motor Speedway, and it is a pretty breathtaking venue here. I'm excited to be here. One of our guests that we have coming on, and we're going to have a few guests come on the show today, but her name is Leah. Leah, your last name?
Ross.
Leah Ross, and she is from the Birthplace of Country Music Museum, and I'm thrilled to have you with us today. Thanks for coming on.
I'm excited about being here and talking about Bristol.
Oh, it's going to be a lot of fun. And before we dive into, you know, all the details, I've got a couple icebreaker questions I like to ask everybody that comes on the show.
Okay.
I know you've been thinking about these. So let's get started. If you could go anywhere in the world, what is your dream destination? What would that be?
Well, my dream destination would probably, and I don't know if it's one place, but my dream has always been to visit every baseball stadium in the United States. So that'd be my dream trip. If I could do that in 1 year, what fun would that be?
Oh my goodness. Now, how many stadiums is that? Have you done that research?
I have not done that research, but I've probably been to close to 10 or 12 of them.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay, what's your favorite stadium that you've been to?
Well, I would have to say the one that was the most important to me was going to Yankee Stadium before they tore it down. That was the best. But I'm a big Braves fan.
Okay. I grew up a Braves fan. So I lived in Alabama and Georgia growing up, and, you know, the Braves were on TBS, right? And
so exactly.
We watched them every single day. And so, yes, I'm a Braves fan, too. I haven't watched baseball as much in recent years as I did in the Chipper Jones days and, you know, Ryan Klesko and all those guys, Fred McGriff. And,
right.
Man, those were the days of Braves baseball. Well, good. Tell me on your remaining list.
Okay.
Tell me which stadium is kind of your highest priority to get to next.
You know, I don't know that I have a highest priority because those that were on my list, which was the Cubs, I wanted to go see them and I did. So I don't have a priority list because I've been to most of the ones I'd like to, like Dodger Stadium. I've been to Colorado. So I just like to start marking them off of my list.
Okay. All right. I like that. So you're just going to go one by one.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to knock them out in one trip?
I wish, but no, I don't think so.
We're going to divide it
probably
up a little bit.
Several years.
Okay. Let's talk about your favorite trip you've ever been on.
Okay. Well, you know, I mentioned Yankee Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
When my parents passed away, my sister, who lives in Alaska, we promised that we would meet each other somewhere every year. And we met in New York for our first visit. And it was one that was so much fun just being with her because we don't see her very often. We went to Yankee Stadium. We went and saw The Lion King, and we didn't have tickets for The Lion King. We stood in line most of the day because they said when people don't show up, they get them to the first people. So we were right at the orchestra, seven rows from the front, and just going to all the many places we went in there was really special.
You know, New York is a fun place. Mm-hmm. My wife and I went there a couple years ago, and we didn't get to go see any shows because we had a really young baby with us that we were carrying around in a little front pack as we went around town. But we love that trip. It's a fun destination.
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah. Although I think you went at the right time. Now may not be the perfect time to visit New York City Metro, right?
Well, it might be pretty safe right now because there's not a lot of people around.
Well, that's
if you practice safety in someone else, it might be pretty safe right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. Well, let's talk about the museum. And Bristol is so unique because it's the birthplace of country music, among other things that make Bristol unique. But I want to talk to you a little bit about some of that that makes Bristol special and about the museum. Can you give us kind of an overview of the country music component of Bristol as a destination?
Well, you know, like you said, Bristol is the birthplace of country music because in 1927, Ralph Peer came to Bristol to record the music of the mountains, and they called it hillbilly music back then. And that was the first commercial recordings of the Carter family, and who's known as the first family of country music, and of the father of country music, which is Jimmy Rogers. So there was a time that I think that our region and our city wasn't proud of that, but once we embraced that heritage, and especially with the popularity of country music and people, you know, I think the thing that's interesting is artists want to know those roots. They want to go back to that and learn from that. So once we embraced that and we started celebrating it and raised the money to build the museum, because it took quite a long time to do that, then we were fortunate that we became a destination. I mean, we've had people from all around the world come visit the museum. So it truly has become a tourist destination for Bristol and our region.
Awesome. Awesome. And the museum itself, tell me a little bit about the experience that you have at the museum itself.
It's a very interactive museum. It's not one where you're going to go in and you're going to see dresses or something that somebody wore to an award show. It's very interactive, and you're going to really delve down into that music. You can go listen to that music and mix your own songs, for example. If you're listening to a song that was recorded in the sessions and you're not a big banjo fan, you can take that banjo out of there. If you just want to hear them sing, you can take all the instrumentation out and hear them sing. But one of our favorite things, or one of the most popular things, we have a karaoke booth. So you go in there and you listen to a song from the sessions, like I think Married Girls, Single Girls in there, and you listen to it, and then you've got to sing back to it, and then you hear yourself being recorded. So it, especially with our school groups, it's turned out to be the one of the most fun things that they do. But it's, like I said, it's very interactive. We have one video that shows how they were playing instruments back there. So it's pretty exciting.
I've got to imagine that that interactive booth where you can hear yourself sing back, it either exposes how talented you are or how not talented you are real quick, doesn't it?
I think it shows most people how why they're not in that business.
Awesome. Well, tell me about your role at the museum and kind of the change that you've seen over the years.
Okay. You know, I'm the executive director of our organization, which is the Birthplace of Country Music Incorporated. The thing that a lot of people don't realize is that we have three branches. We have the museum, which we've just talked about, but we also produce an annual festival called Bristol Rhythm and Roots Reunion, which this year we did have to cancel it because of the pandemic, but we'll celebrate our 20th anniversary hopefully next year. And then we also have a radio station, Radio Bristol. It's a low-powered FM, but we broadcast via the internet all around the globe.
That's awesome. Okay, you were telling me a little bit about the festival beforehand, and I want to have you talk a little bit about it because that festival sounds pretty incredible.
You know, it's called Bristol Rhythm and Roots Reunion, like I said, and what has happened over 20 years. When we first started, and I became the executive director in their fifth year, and we were having probably between 7,500 to 10,000 people in our downtown over the weekend, and the event has grown to around 40 to 45,000 depending on the year in our downtown. And if you've ever been to our downtown, you know it's not a big downtown.
But that's a lot of people for
that
area.
We have people everywhere. And, you know, it really has become a reunion because people have met there. We've had artists, especially one artist, Pokey LaFarge, who met his girlfriend there and married her. We've had weddings there. But it's not your typical, what I would say, outdoor festival or festival period, because we have many different genres of music. We may be the birthplace of country music, but those recordings really spawned many different. We'll have blues, we'll have more traditional country than today's country, we'll have bluegrass, we'll have Americana. I would say if I had to classify it as one of those genres of music, it'd be Americana, because you know that fits so many.
Very cool. And I want to go back a little bit to the museum because I had another question. But it's the birthplace of country music. It's where you can really learn the history of country music. Do you get some of these stars that come through Nashville and are kind of make their way in the country music industry that want to come back and see the museum and kind of learn about the roots of and the history of country music?
Yes, and I think that if when you go through the museum, especially in, we have a immersion theater where we have many different artists that have been at the festival or played, and you'll see them there. Definitely, I don't know if you know who Hayes Carl is.
I don't. Is that bad?
No, it's not bad. Okay. But he's an Americana artist, and I was watching one of his virtual shows the other night, and I try not to watch too many because I always give to it, you know. But I got a card from him today because he was booked for this year's festival, and we have him booked for 2021, and he said he couldn't wait to get back to Bristol. But we've had, I'll tell you some of the people that we've had come through the museum, whether they played the museum or not. Billy Bob Thornton, if you know him.
Yes.
He played here in Bristol at a brewery right down the road here and wanted to come see the museum. We've had Steve Earles come through it. So many of those that have played the festival have been through it.
Oh, that's great. That's got to be a lot of fun to see today's manifestation of the historical aspect of your role. That's got to be kind of fun.
Yeah, I think so. And I think one of the things that I've learned over the year is how those artists really want to learn that history.
Right, right. Well, you have an interesting role in the destination as a museum. Our listeners, a lot of them are destinations or ancillary businesses within a destination similar to yours. And so, you know, a couple of questions that I want to ask. One is the dynamic between you and the destination and how you work together. What's something about that you think makes your life easier or better by partnering with the destination?
You know, I think that one of the things it does for any organization that partners with a destination organization is it gives a different voice than you have, because you as an owner or someone that's involved with it may think that you know everything and you see everything. And I think it just gives another eye and another perspective to where I may say, well, you want to come because of this, and they may say something else and find out that they've hooked them line and sinker, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. Okay, well, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about your customer experience and how your experience that you provide for your visitors fits into the destination experience. We'll come back and talk about that in just a moment.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, everybody, we've been talking about recovery for a while now, and my team at Relic has been working on recovery campaigns for several destinations over the last couple of months. They've actually developed a pretty amazing, we'll call it an algorithm, to know when it's safe to do acquisition marketing in a market. And so what I mean by that is you've got government regulations, you've got, you know, how is the virus affecting that market, whether there's been a decrease in cases or a decrease in deaths in that market. When is it safe to advertise, hey, come to our destination? Like I said, our team has come up with this algorithm to provide that information for you, and we're offering a free market report. We're calling it Recovery Triggers. And if you'd like a free recovery trigger report for your target market where you want to draw visitors from, please email me directly at adam@relicagency.com, or you can go to recoverytriggers.relicagency.com, and we'll get you set up with a free report, and we even have the ability to send you a weekly recurring report so you can see what's happening in that market on a weekly basis and make sure you're launching your acquisition campaign at the perfect time. Okay, welcome back, everybody, to the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm here with Leah Ross from the birthplace of country music, and we've had a great show so far, but we've got a lot more to get to, don't we, Leah?
We do.
Well, first of all, I want to talk about, you know, you as the birthplace of country music museum, you have a customer experience that you like to make sure you take care of. How, knowing that there's so many other experiences that a visitor will have when they come to the destination, how do you make sure that your customer experience gives them a positive touch point on their trip throughout the destination?
You know, we're very fortunate to have such a great staff who really is proud of their product. And from the minute you walk into the door at the museum, and especially right now, we're making sure that we keep everyone safe, not only our staff but our visitors. But you get that down-home feeling or that welcome. And we have great volunteers who are up in the exhibits to answer any questions anyone have. But one of the things that, you know, it takes around a good 2 hours if you want to experience the whole thing to go through the museum. But some people are there a half a day because they really delve down into it. But the other thing that I think that we do for our customers that come through is we send them into our downtown. And while we are a city, it's a pretty small city of about 5 short blocks in comparison to a lot of cities. But you think about it, for a downtown now, we have 5 women's clothing stores, we have men's clothing, we have jewelry, we have great restaurants, and only a couple of those are chain restaurants. All the rest are, you can get good Southern soul food cooking to, you know, barbecue, etc., which the South is so proud of. But we just like to make sure that they understand that not only is the museum special and they're really going to enjoy it, but there's so much more to explore in Bristol than just the museum.
So they have a great experience at the museum, and you tell them, where's the next place you can have a great experience, so that that experience continues. I think that's awesome.
Right. And a lot of people don't know this, but Bristol straddles a state line. So if you go down State Street, you could have 1 foot in Tennessee and 1 foot in Virginia. And we see people standing in the middle of the road all the time because we have markers in the middle getting their pictures made. And our community knows that we've got to slow down for those people.
Got it. Okay, great. Well, let's talk about the downtown. You mentioned the downtown, and I know that especially in the last 10, 15 years, the downtown has changed and improved a lot. I know that your festival that you put on, the Roots Rhythm and
Bristol
Blues?
Bristol Rhythm and Roots Reunion.
Bristol Rhythm and Roots Reunion. I'll get that.
That's okay.
but with that festival, you guys block off the entire downtown. And, I mean, you've got people singing in restaurants, and you've got people blocking off a big parking lot and singing in there. So tell me about downtown and why that's such a cool place for everybody to go for that festival, and then even just when they're coming to visit.
You know, the festival, you can't walk very far without hearing music coming from somewhere. And one of the things that we're kind of proud of, we really book a lot of what we consider up-and-coming artists that you might not have heard of. You think about the Avett Brothers, for example. They were there when nobody knew them. But what we hear from our people that come or our visitors that come, they say, you know, the thing that we love about the festival, we don't know half the artists on that list, but we know that we're going to go away from there following an artist that we'd never heard of. And we have people that follow them all around the country. So I think that it really is just a fun time. I mean, I put something on Facebook the other day that I was really sad that the festival had been canceled and we wouldn't have a festival this year. I said, but I put a challenge to everyone out there to go out in the street and dance. I said, not in traffic, and send us a video.
And did you get some submissions there?
Well, you know what? I don't see them. I'm my marketing team, and they haven't shared those. It's not that weekend yet, so it'll be this weekend. Hopefully, we'll get them.
Okay. I'm excited to see some of those videos. That's great. Let's talk about the downtown.
Okay.
You mentioned that, like I said, there has been such a revitalization over the last 10 to 15 years. What are the main attractions down there that people should be looking for?
You know, I think that... breweries are such a big thing right now. We've got breweries downtown. We have restaurants that have patios outside. There's some music going on from time to time in the different restaurants, especially on the weekend. There's during the summertime downtown, every week there's a biker's night. So all these motorcycles come to downtown and they block off streets. So, you know, from shopping to music to just exploring, one of those escape games downtown. There's businesses downtown. There's a fudgery downtown that if you want to put on some weight, you could go there. But it's just a fun town to experience, and it's not a lot of walking. I mean, there's definitely walking if you're going down to a downtown. But because we are pretty well closed together, and you've got to try out Blackbird Bakery. Those donuts,
Okay. All right. That's good advice. Boy, you're putting a lot on my list here. The fudgery, the bakery. I don't know.
Well, you know, and one thing I didn't mention is we have two boutique hotels in our downtown now. We have the Bristol Hotel, I think, where you're staying.
I stayed there last night. It's amazing.
And it's real close to the museum. It's on the same block. So if someone's traveling here, that's a great place. But we just had another one open, the Bristol Sessions Hotel, which is I help name.
Oh,
they really embrace their city, and if you go in there, it's really themed with music and stuff. And they when I was meeting them before they got going, they says, "Liv, we got to come up with a cool name." And I said, "Call it the Sessions Hotel after the Bristol Sessions Hotel." So it stuck. So, but you know, I'm very proud of Bristol, and the people there are the most kind, welcoming people you'll ever find.
Well, and I can tell it's a tight-knit community if you're getting involved in the naming process for a major hotel going in downtown. That's pretty exciting to be responsible for that name.
Yeah, it was exciting. I like to tell that.
That's great. Two more things that I want to talk about. You mentioned an artist named Dallas Wayne and kind of his relationship with Bristol. And then we're going to talk about COVID. So let's start with Dallas, though, maybe upbeat, and then talk about COVID.
Yeah, as I was telling you, Dallas Wayne, who is an artist that's lived in Austin, Texas forever, okay? And he's got a serious show on Willie's Roadhouse, and he also has one on Outlaw Country. But he was looking to get out of Texas because he wanted to be where he could travel and not take so long to get, because I think he does about 200 gigs a year. And so he chose Bristol because of it being the birthplace of country music and because of its location, because Bristol, in a 350-mile radius, is closest to the biggest population of the United States. So you can see it's not a bad trip to come to Bristol. So if you're looking for somewhere to go, we've got our arms open waiting on you.
I like it. Okay, let's talk about COVID. How has COVID affected the museum?
You know, from traveling, et cetera, it's been, and I think it will continue to be a real challenge over the next year, because as soon as this happened, all of our tour buses, and we were seeing record numbers of tour buses booked for they've all canceled for the end of the year. You think about our schools, no school trips, and we were getting to where that was really growing. Our doors were closed for 3 months. So you think about that with your admissions and everything, it really has put a financial challenge on us that we will get past, because we're that determined and our community is determined to keep us where we need to be. But on top of that, you know, we canceled the Bristol Rhythm and Roots reunion this year, and we'll usually see 500 or more people visiting the museum during the festival, and it's a big loss for our economy here. our downtown restaurants would tell us that it's what helped them get through the cold winter months. That we had one restaurant tell us that over the weekend they bring over $100,000 in, and now they're not going to have that. So it's affecting everyone across the nation. So if you're planning that trip, come back and help us.
Got it. Well, from the standpoint of COVID, obviously you had to make a lot of changes really fast, including closing for 3 months. What's your plan moving forward? I mean, I don't know that we're settling in just yet to the new normal, but we're starting to get little hints and signs of what this new normal is going to look like. What do you see as the future in the short term for the museum?
You know, I think we, for a long time, will still practice the wearing of the mask. We have the social distancing. We have all the things necessary to make it. And as soon as we closed the museum, we started planning for the reopening of the museum. So we've taken those precautions with, because we have a lot of touch screens. So now we have stylists. So we're not having all of that. We clean. We have a more regimented cleaning process throughout the day. We have the social distancing. There's some things that's happened that we can't do right now. We don't have shows in our theater performance because it's 100 seats, so it's very hard. But I think we're a long way from getting rid of, or it seems to be, masks and all the things that we require people to do when they come to the museum.
So you're taking those precautions in the short term, and you'll kind of see over time as the regulations change and the precautions change, you'll go with it.
We'll adjust accordingly as things happen.
Great. Well, in a venue like this at the Bristol Motor Speedway, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, when there's a major event like this, what kind of spillover of traffic goes into the museum when they have a major NASCAR event here or something like that?
Well, a lot of people come to the race with a family, and sometimes the females don't come. So we get a lot of traffic in our museum and our museum store, and so we do downtown too. And, I've worked on a temporary basis at the racetrack probably for 25 years. So not having the race in the spring and not being able to have the people, I'm even missing that because I'm event driven and I love being in a crowd and doing those things. But it's pretty exciting to think they're going to have one that not next weekend.
Yep.
But we've got a lot of virtual things this weekend, so you need to check us out at birthplaceofcountrymusic.org.
So birthplaceofcountrymusic.org, and then your social pages, I'm sure they can just search Birthplace of Country Music Museum and you guys will be there in the top results.
They can, or Bristol Rhythm and Roots at the top.
Bristol Rhythm and Roots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Leah, it sure has been fun to have you on the show to chat a little bit about the Birthplace of Country Music Museum, about the Bristol Rhythm and Roots Festival.
Yes.
And thanks for sharing some of your experience and knowledge with us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, I thank you for letting me be on, and I hope that I've inspired people to come visit us.
I hope so, too. And how could we not with the information you shared? So thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. This has been another great episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned. We've got more shows coming here from the Bristol Motor Speedway. Okay, guys, since we started the Destination Marketing Podcast a little over a year ago, I've had several destinations reach out and say, hey, could you help me start a podcast? And at first we were kind of like, well, no, that's not really what we do. But after enough requests, we said, you know what, let's explore this. And we've created a turnkey program for destinations where we will produce, we will host, we will edit, and we will publish your podcast for your destination on a weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly basis. And all you have to do is show up and answer some questions. We're really excited about this program. We've got a few destinations that have been doing really, really well with their podcasts. And if you've ever thought about creating a podcast for your destination, but you don't have all the equipment or you don't have the expertise or any of that type of stuff, let us take that off your hands. Let Relic handle your podcast creation and production. And all you have to do is show up and answer questions about all the amazing things there are to do within your destination. So let me know if you're interested. Email me at adam@relicagency.com and we'll get you set up on this podcast program.